Thanks for joining us and welcome to the Stonebridge Church Podcast. Here at Stonebridge, our goal is to lead people into a real, healthy, and growing relationship with Jesus Christ. If you'd like to join us live, we hold services every Sunday at 9:30 and 11:05 a.m. at 1 Stonebridge Church Drive in the Woodlands, Texas. You can also stream our services online on Facebook, our website, our YouTube channel, and our church app. We invite you to check out our website at GoStonebridge.com and give us a like on Facebook at Facebook.com/GoStonebridge. This week, Pastor Steve continues our series, Dream Small. Now, here's Pastor Steve.
All right, good morning. We've been doing this series called Dream Small, and a lot of it is about how you raise your kids and their influence and all. But one of the things that's kind of unusual about doing something like this is it's not really designed for you to bring your kids in and say, okay, y'all need to hear this. It's, of course, aimed at who? Yeah, the adults, the people that teach and raise and determine direction and things like that, because that has so much to say about who kids are. And this morning, I want to talk to you about the fact that you should never underestimate the power of faith-based habits that you build into your kids. This is, if you go into the Bible and you look in the Old Testament, this is absolutely a principle and a practice of in the Old Testament of Israel, the Jewish people. They were taught to do this over and over again, to reiterate over and over again who their kids were and to teach them about God, because it was just that important to build these things into them. And so I asked this question. It is in your outline. It'd be a good discussion question. This will pop up in there. Why and what makes good faith-based habits? And let me give you an answer to this, and it'll kind of spur the conversation that I want to get into that is totally one way, because you're not allowed to comment back. But it's all right. You can laugh about that. You'll get a chance later. But here's what I think makes good faith-based habits. It's the habits that you build into your kids that reinforce their true identity, really who they are. And that was all the habits that, if you go to the Old Testament, even in the New Testament, all of those were designed to do exactly that, to help reinforce to their children as they were growing up who they were and whose they were. Because they're going to live in a world, you're going to live in a world that is going to many times promote a different idea and try to identify you differently. And then the other thing is, which I think is true of our culture now more than ever, most people, when they're looking or they're stopping, they're trying to figure out, who am I? And what am I going to do with my life? What am I going to follow? Have kind of come to the age or the time of saying, I reject anything from the outside that's going to tell me who I am. And I'm going to look where to find my identity. Where do we look? I'm going to look inside and try to find my true identity. But listen, if you think about it, there's a problem with that. Because just looking inside of yourself is a very difficult place for you to look in and say, that's who I am. But that's kind of where we are. And culturally, that's kind of the highest goal or the highest good. Let me tell you a couple of reasons. I won't spend a lot of time on this, but reasons I think that's a false thing. Number one is because your inner feelings, and when you look on the inside, doesn't come from just you on the inside. It's heavily influenced by what? What's on the outside? What, advertisement, what the culture says you should be, what seems to be the most popular right now, what seems to be the most rewarded right now. And there's absolutely no way you can separate what you're feeling on the inside and what you think about yourself on the inside from what's going on in the outside world. When I was growing up, it was one of those things, maybe you're this way, my feelings inside about what I wanted to be changed constantly. And my dad was always pushing with us, because he came up in a time when he was a kid during the Depression years and then came up, through the wars and all. So he would always say, you can be anything you want to be. That's what he would say. If you put your mind to it, you can be anything you want to be, which was kind of the idea he was pushing, not meaning to misguide, but saying, look inside of yourself. What do you want to be? You can be that. But then I would ask this later on in life. Yeah, but what's worth being? What's worth going after? Because I realized I was incredibly influenced by the world around me. During this time of the year, I wanted to be a football player, right? Because football's coming up. Later on, I wanted to be a what? Basketball player. Later on, I wanted to be what? baseball player. Later on, I want to be what? TV star. Later on, I want to be, went to a concert. I want to be a rock, you know. And to say that those things don't influence on the inside, you know, what you think you want to be or what you think you want to do with your life would be very foolish. Because absolutely, they influence. And that's why I say your identity, who you are, and your habits, what you decide to chase after, to reinforce, to go after, you can't really separate those two. If you think you are a certain way, but your habits, you constantly practice something else, you won't think that for very long because they will influence your sense of who you are. Let me give you one prime example of that. I'm not going to go into this, but Old Testament, there's a guy named Moses. Anybody remember Moses? Sure, Charlton Heston. And Charlton was, well, that was, you know, that was Moses when I grew up. And Charlton Heston, you know, you remember Moses? He's a little kid. He grows up in a time when the Hebrews are in Egypt. Joseph has rescued them and taken them to Egypt. So they're not in the land that was given to them or the land that they were supposed to live in. They're actually in Egypt because of the famine. And there they flourish. But the Egyptians and especially the Pharaoh gets really worried because, you know, if the Hebrews are a huge nation and they're not really warriors, but what if our enemies from the south down in the middle part of Africa attack us? They were traditional enemies of the Egyptians, or the traditional enemies in the Middle East. If they come down and attack, and what if the Hebrews join in with them? Man, we could be overwhelmed by our enemies. So we need to do something. You remember what they did? Pharaoh decided, what are we going to do? Let's put every male child to death. And so because that way he could cut back on the population and their possibility and influence. So Moses' mom decides she doesn't want to lose her son. And so she puts him in a little basket made out of reeds, pushes him into the Nile. And who finds little Moses? Do you remember? Yeah, it was Pharaoh's daughter. And so what does she do? Well, she looks at it as, hey, the gods of the Nile have sent me a child. And so I'm going to take this gift and take this child and raise him as he should be raised as a future prince of Egypt and a pharaoh. I think Disney's made some cartoons out of that recently, haven't they? And so, you know, and that's who he's going to be. That will be his identity. But what happens to Moses as he becomes an adult? At some point, Moses learns what? Who he really is. Now, it wasn't because Moses searched on the inside and he looked down inside and he said, I looked down in my heart and I've chased after my own feelings and my own desires and figured out that I am a son of the Hebrew nation. Where did he get this from? He got it from the outside. He's told this. He learned this somehow. And now he's caught in this dilemma. From the outside, I have learned that I didn't really come from Egypt. I didn't really come from the Pharaoh's daughter. I came from the Hebrews. Now, what am I going to do? What am I going to do with my true identity? See, I think all of us struggle with exactly the same thing. What is my true identity? Who am I really? Where am I going to get that from? Because if you think you're just going to find it out for yourself on the inside, then you're probably living a very foolish life, not realizing how much you are influenced from the outside and how much, you know, the outside world is telling you who you are and what you're going to be and what would be worthwhile to become in life. And that's fine. That's the world that you and I live in. And most of the time, we listen to the messages that align with what we're good at, what we think we can really be successful at. And we kind of reject the ones that we realize we're not good at. But there's a better place. I think there's a better place to get your true identity and to build the habits into your life and build habits into your kids' lives about, you know, who they really are, because that's going to be just paramount to the sense of satisfaction in life. We're going to talk about that next week. It's going to be paramount to, you know, to the things that they do and what they align themselves with based on who they think they are. You were probably raised by parents who heavily influenced that. My parents certainly did that. My parents, there were certain behaviors, certain things that we did, and they would say this. They would say, listen, Bradleys don't do that, or Bradleys do this. And they were absolutely influencing once again into their children. This is who you are. This is what you do. My brother and my sister and my parents came from a very poor background, but did well. My dad became a doctor, and they never said you have to make these grades or anything like that. We just knew. We just had this idea, this sense of this is who we were. And so even though, you know, like most boys growing up, I didn't want to study, you know, I had things to do with my life. I wasn't going to waste it, you know, going to school and say, but, you know, it was expected. I knew those were part of the expectations that they'd built. And so those habits were just a part of life, even if I didn't like them, even if they were hard to move toward. I just knew that was what we were supposed to do. You're probably the same way. You are heavily influenced by some people in your life. In fact, I'll tell you this. At some point, if you have kids and your kids are moving into the teen years and on, let me tell you what Joni and I did, which you should do. Pray for youth leaders and college leaders and ministers that will influence your children because you realize your influence is waning. You know, you don't have as much. Mom and dad are not as cool as they used to be. It's just the way it is, you know. And now my kids remind me of that all the time. You know, you're just that, and so they're going to look to someone that's cool, someone that's worth imitating, someone who's worth listening to, someone who's worth copying their habits and their behaviors in life to say, I want to be like them. I want my life to end up where their life ends up. And I would tell you, you know, pray for those influencers because you had huge opportunity to shape, build habits into your kids, and then someone else is going to pick that up afterwards. Here's a verse. This is from the King James Version. It's probably one you've heard before if you were raised around church. But John 10:10 says this. Do you know this verse? It says, the thief comes but to steal, to kill, to destroy. I can't say cometh, I'm sorry. But, you know, that's King James. But what does it say? What did Jesus say about himself? He said, but I have come that you might have what? Life. And not just life, he said, but that you might have it more what? It means a richer, a fuller life, a more sense of value to your life. That's exactly why Jesus said that he came, so that you would have that. And that is something that God and that Jesus comes to not say, and so dig deep inside and find that life within you. No, not at all. That Jesus comes to say, and that life is going to come from outside of you toward you. That's an entirely different approach to life than our culture will lead you to right now. It says that's where that life will come from. That's where you will look and you will find that life, and that's where you will find that sense of who you are. See, I struggle with people. You've heard me before if you're around me, who say I just can't seem to forgive myself. I struggle with that. So just let you know, if you want to come up and say me that, you'll really irritate me, but yeah, you can. And I really struggle with a sense of loving myself. And see, let me tell you why you struggle with it. Because you're usually trying to find it from within yourself. You won't find it there. It comes from outside of yourself. And I know that you're like me, you say, yeah, but if I look outside of myself, my goodness, there are people who love me, people who hate me. There are people who care about me. There are people who could care less about me. If I'm looking outside myself, right, it depends on where you look outside of yourself. If you look inside of yourself for those things, here's the problem. You won't find it inside of yourself. You will find mixed messages inside of yourself. When you dig deep into your own soul and try to just, you know, be your own person, look at that, you'll find a lot of things that you'll say, whew, man, wish I hadn't found that, right? We better hide that, cover that up, because people wouldn't like it if they knew that. But, you know, that's part of the problem, and it's confusing on the inside. If I try to chase all of my desires, they would be in conflict. I would constantly be struggling, you know, with those desires, just butting heads with those desires. I had a friend named Stuart, and he was a youth minister and had heavily influenced me. And I was a high school student. He was a redhead also. I used to be a redhead. And he may still have red hair. And we were much alike, except I was I really enjoyed athletics. He wasn't very athletic, but he was much more intellectual than I was. And Stuart, here's what Stuart did, and he would tell me the story because he knew I was going through this struggle also. He said, at some point, there were two things I wanted to be as I graduated from college. One is I wanted to be an actor, and the natural pull of that, influence of that. The other was I wanted to be a minister. And I said, so what did you do? And it was really good because, again, I think my parents prayed for influence over me also. I said, what did you do? And he said, so I pursued both. I applied to a seminary to go to school. I was Presbyterian then, so he would have gone to a Presbyterian seminary. And I also applied to an acting school in North Carolina, one that very prestigious. And some people here know because their kids have gone there. And he said, a couple months later, I got back the acceptance from both at the same time. And he said, I got the one from the acting school came in first, and the same day, the one from the seminary came in. And he said, and I realized at that time, I wanted to be a minister. And I let go. So this is what he taught me. He says, listen, you have to pursue those things to try to figure them out. But at some point, God will help you understand if you will look to him and teach you and lead you what he wants you to do with your life. I'm not saying that, you know, being an actor wouldn't be what, you know, God directs somebody toward. I'm just saying that, you know, you're going to find that out not from inside, because he struggled inside. He could not figure it out on the inside. But he found it out in the influence that came from the outside of his life to what he wanted to do. So here's my question. In fact, I want to take you to a passage. What would be the better place for you to look and to find out who you are? What would be the better place with your kids that you would say, I want to help my kids understand who they are, what their identity is? And I'm not saying as you raise your kids that your kids will not go through an identity crisis. They will. We all do as we grow up, because we live in a world that conflicting messages. But where would you want them to start? Where would you? And I will take you to a passage. This is in the Gospel according to John, chapter number 10, where this verse I just read, where it comes from. But it's really a important passage, as Jesus is actually teaching something very similar. Let me read for you. This is verse number 1, John chapter 10. It says, I tell you the truth. This is Jesus speaking. Anyone who sneaks over the wall of the sheepfold rather than going through the gate must surely be a thief or a robber. And you say, yeah, okay, I understand what you're saying. Verse number 2, but the one who enters through the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice, and they come to him. He calls his own sheep, catch this, he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. After he has gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them, and they follow him because they know his what? Yeah, they know his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. And I in your outline, the handout, I highlighted that verse because I think this is really key as you influence, raise, teach, lead your children, other children, is to understand they won't follow a stranger. Why? Because they don't know his voice, so they run from him. Isn't this what, if you're a parent, isn't this what you teach your kids about strangers? Don't get in the car with a stranger, right? Don't, you know, because you don't know them. You don't know what they're like. So here's what I want to point out to you. This is a very common sort of narrative in Jesus' day. Many rulers and leaders use the idea of a shepherd and sheep because in their part of the country, it was very common. Here we would be talking about, you know, a cowboy and you know, longhorn steers, right? So it wouldn't be sheep. But they're very common for them. But today, this would be very offensive. In fact, for a lot of people, it is very offensive. Wait a minute, you're calling me a sheep? You're saying I'm like a sheep? Let me tell you why it's offensive, and in some ways, it might have even been offensive in their day. Sheep, as a domesticated animal, sheep are the least self-sufficient domesticated animal on the planet. They are. They cannot take care of themselves. They get lost. They get in trouble. They wander off into places where they're easy prey. Sheep, I was told this. I thought this was really interesting, that if you put good food and bad food in front of a sheep, they are just as likely to eat the bad stuff as the good stuff. And you're like, are you kidding me? I can even figure that out, can't you? Yeah, don't eat that stuff. Eat. Well, I don't know. Sometimes I go to McDonald's, and so I guess I don't. Haven't figured it out, you know. So my wife tells me that. They can't take care of themselves. They won't find their way home on their own. They will wander off. Sheep are very prone to, you know, where is little Fluffy? And you go and, you know, and little Fluffy's in a ditch somewhere in the briars. Why did you get in there? You know, and that's just what sheep are. And so for us, that could be very offensive. Because we would say, wait a minute, so you're saying I can't figure out my own life? I can't lead myself? I can't determine who I am and what I'm going to become and where I'm going to go? That's an incredibly offensive thing. But like I said, we're a whole lot more influenced from the outside than we like to admit that we are. So here's the picture that he's painting. At night, the sheep would be brought into a sheepfold, and it would have more than likely some sort of rock wall, and several herds would be brought into the same sheepfold, and there would be a gatekeeper or someone who was standing there at the door to guard the door to the sheep all night long. And then in the morning, the shepherd would come, and the shepherd who owns the sheep, who's the legitimate, you know, shepherd for the sheep, would come to the gatekeeper, and the gatekeeper opens the gate, and the shepherd, here's what's really cool, the shepherd calls his sheep by name. So in their day, a shepherd named his sheep. He gave them their name, their identity. That's what it doesn't mean he called them names. It means he gave it to them. And this is who they were. You name your kids? Sure you do. You give them, you know what I do? I give my kids not only their official name, because, you know, that has to be something that is presentable, you know, I guess, in the outside world. But I have nicknames, don't you, for your kids? Sure you do. You have nicknames for your kids. And my daughter, I used to call her Half Pint, because she loves it. She still, if I refer to her now, even as a mom, as my half pint, she still loves it, because she knows that's a term for me of great affection for her. She was always, you know, shorter, smaller, and yet always a high achiever. So that was just kind of, you know, how my 4-year-old granddaughter, I call her Littlefoot. You ever watch, you know, the Land Before Time? That's one of the Disney things. One of the characters is Littlefoot. She loves it, you know. Now, sometimes it doesn't work out real well. Sometimes you come up with a nickname and they're like, I hate that, you know, so you probably change that nickname. But we named them. I named my dogs. I have two Chihuahuas. And my granddaughter asked me this time, the last visit, why is this one called Cowboy? I have Cowboy and Bear. And I said, well, you know, we live in Texas. And in Texas, there are a lot of, you know, what? And she said, hot sun. And I said, yeah, there's a lot of that too. But in Texas, there are a lot of cowboys. So I named him Cowboy. And then Bear came from, I actually told her that Bear came from, because I knew she would know Winnie the Pooh, right? And if you know the little song, Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, little silly Willie. You don't know that song? Little silly Willie, old Bear. And I said, that's where he got his name. Actually, it didn't. So I guess I didn't tell a complete truth. So when I was naming them, one of the shows that I liked when I was growing up was a show on TV of a truck driver, and he had a chimpanzee in the show that traveled with him always in the cab, and they went on adventures and all that. And the show was named, well, I do the song. That's how I remember everything. I'm B.J. McKay, and this is my best friend. Yeah, you saw the song. Okay, I mean the show. I just want to make sure I wasn't the only one. And I love that. So I figure if a chimpanzee can be named Bear, a Chihuahua, you know, can be named Bear, right? But those are their names. Here's what's really interesting. Even with Chihuahuas, your dogs do the same thing. Guess what? If you call their name, do they respond? They know their name. They know the sound of their name. They also know the sound of eat or food or, you know, things like that too, but they know the sound of their name. And you can call their name, and they can be among strangers and feel kind of lost. And Chihuahuas do that, and, you know, and they're pretty skittish and scary, and they will hear me call their name, and they will know where that's coming from, and they will run to me. Because I'm the one that named them. And if Joni calls their name, you know, they associate that together. This is saying Jesus names them. This is saying the shepherd names his sheep, that Jesus names us. Why? Out of affection, out of identity. We belong to him. He names us. And so when the shepherd would come to the sheep gate and he calls his sheep, only his sheep that he calls by name, they come to him, and he leads them out into pasture, and he's the one that pulls them together and leads them out, and they find satisfaction. They find what they're really looking for, all because of not them, not the sheep, not because they're so smart and they know where to go and know where to find food and they know what to do with their lives. It's the opposite, and it's an intentional example to say even sheep are cared for and looked after and led and, you know, by the shepherd, who in this case is Jesus. So let me give you 4 points from this first part. Number one, he is the legitimate shepherd. That's what the story is all about. That Jesus himself is the legitimate shepherd. The other voices that we hear that tell us who we are, the problem is they're not legitimate. They didn't give us life. They didn't make us. They didn't shape us. I know you say, no, I live in a world and those things do shape me. I understand that. But not legitimately, they have influence over us. But he is the one. Remember, we were in John chapter 1, and it says that nothing created, none of us, were created outside of him. He even gave us life. He made you the way you are. Your personality, the traits that you have, he shaped every one of those things. So he is the only one legitimately who can call us and say, but this is what your life should be about. This is what you should be attached to. And the reason we get confused is because of the other voices rather than his voice. Here's number two, pop up on the screen. There it is. He knows his own and he gives them, what did we say? He gives them what? Names. That means he gives them their identity. The name was associated with who they were and whose they were. It's the same thing with you and I. He is the one who gives us names. We respond when we build in habits to listen to him and be around him. We know to respond to that voice. And here's number three. You want to fill in the blank. His voice becomes familiar to us, which is really key. I know that voice. I know that sound. I know, even if somebody else I don't know tries to call me by that name, listen, I know that voice. And then the fourth thing is he leads and he gathers or he forms his flock. That's what he does. He brings them to himself. In fact, that's exactly what Jesus Christ did coming into this world, was to go and to gather and to form and bring his own to himself. Now, not all of the sheep in the pen walk out with him, but those who belong to him, those who he has named, those who are his, they walk out with him. This is what it says in the next verse. It says in verse number 6, those who heard Jesus use this illustration didn't understand what he meant. In other words, they're trying to say, okay, I see what you're saying, but what does that mean? So he explained it to them. Now, he's going to actually change part of it. So if you've ever been confused by this, let me help you. He says, I tell you the truth, I am the what? I am the gate of the sheep. And before he, the good shepherd, now he calls himself the gate. What would happen is when the shepherd would take his sheep for the day out to pasture, he would have his own little pen. So it'd probably be made out of some sort of briars and sticks and all too, and there the shepherd would be the gatekeeper, and the sheep would go into their little pen, which was a place of protection, and then he would let them out right there to the pasture around them. That's why they were made that way, because he may move it around, and they would pasture, find what they need, and if an enemy or something frightening came, they would run back to the shepherd and into the protection of the little pen that he had had built. And so in this case, Jesus is actually then going further and saying, but I'm also the gate. I'm the one that they come to for protection and find their place of protection in. That's just, you know, the history of it. And then he says in verse 8, all who came before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. They'll be rescued. They'll find the safe place to grow and to learn and find the life that they're looking for. So he goes on to say, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying what? Yeah, that's why he does these things. That's the whole purpose of these things, is for him to watch after them and provide them the type of life that he wanted for them. Let me give you two more. Number five, you won't find the identity, the value, the esteem that you're looking for without going through him. That's what he's saying. I know we want it. I know we think we need it, but there's no way to find it outside of the one who loves us and the one who created us and who made us and who cares for it. You can't find it that any other way. Neither can your children. No matter what identity you find outside of him, that identity becomes fragile. It becomes temporary. It becomes false. It's not who you really are. I'm not saying it's not a part of your life, but you want to make sure that you keep it in the right perspective as far as your life is concerned. And then number six is because it's not achieved, this identity is received. This is not something that you earn or that you go out and you make for yourself, even though a lot of us would say, well, we do make our own reputation, we do. But your identity is something that is given to you from the outside. It's something that God says, this is who you are. This is what really radically changed my life back in my high school years, was when I realized who God was and who Jesus was, and I realized then because of that who I was. And so rather than looking around and saying, let all these other things tell you who you are, they didn't have the same influence on me that they had before because I'd found my identity in a different place. Now, it doesn't mean I still, you know, didn't live in a real world. It doesn't mean that, you know, when you're rejected that it's not painful. It is. It doesn't mean when you're, you know, working toward a grade in school and you don't get it that you're hurt over it and you know, absolutely. All of those things are very real things. But that's different than you not achieving something or not getting somewhere and you not knowing who you are. Because you don't attain your identity. Your identity comes from, well, who made you? Who gave you life? Who shaped you? Who formed you? Who called you to a certain direction in life as you go and as you live your life? Look at how he finishes. He says in verse 11, he says, I am the good shepherd. And he's going to separate himself in this way. I'm the good shepherd. He said, the good shepherd does what? The good shepherd what? He sacrifices his life for his sheep. Man, that's totally different. Why would he do that? Because they're his. Because he loves them. There's this sense of his obligation and his compassion coming together to do something. It says in verse 12, a hired hand will run when he sees a wolf coming. He will, and I underline this part too in your outline, he will abandon the sheep because they won't belong, because they don't belong to him, and he isn't their shepherd. They're just something for him to profit from. So if you're looking for something or someone who will not abandon you, you will not find it in those other things. You can be really good at your job. You can be really good at what you do, and that will be a wonderful thing. You can even, you know, attain certain positions and certain awards, but guess what? They're all temporary. They all abandon you because they just move on to the next person. And my daughter, when she was graduating from college, she had won some awards, and so her name was on a big brass plaque in a building. And so I walked in there because I was very proud of her and at the graduation time, and we were looking at it and seeing her name and going like, and they, you know, and I said, they should have put half pint, you know, up there, because that's really what you're known as. And, you know, and as I'm hugging her, I'm looking at her, and then I, you know, it's just me. I'm pretty bad about stuff like this. I said, you know, and the amazing thing about this is in 2 weeks from now, no one will care. She's like, thanks, Dad. You know, I feel like, you know, the guy from Christmas Vacation, just thanks, Dad, you know. And here's the funniest thing. 2 weeks later, she called me and she said, you were right. I said, of course I'm right. Because there now it's just, who's going to get it the next time? Who's going to win it again? Whose name's going to be up there? And I said, at one point, I still remember this, Focus on the Family. What's his name? James Dobson. James Dobson, you may not know this, but James Dobson was on the faculty and actually headed the Southern Cal's department in his field of psychology and all too. But James Dobson, as a student, was a, I think he might even had NCAA awards in tennis, something like that. And so there were trophies in a trophy case with his name on it because he was a star athlete at Southern Cal. And he said one time, he said, this will really, you know, help your self-esteem. One time I get a phone call and they said, we're rebuilding cabinets. And these are the guys from the maintenance crew. We've been rebuilding cabinets for new trophies and new awards, how they're doing. And so they're throwing away all the old ones. And we came across one with your name on it. What do you want us to do with it before we throw it in the trash? He says, thanks. You know, what a wonderful thing to, because you thought this was going to last. You thought this would be there forever. They can't, you know, remember they always tell you this, they can't take it away from you. No, but they can throw it in the trash, you know, because they've just moved on to the next thing. I'm not saying that, listen, you shouldn't try to achieve things. I think that's a wonderful thing. And here's the even better than that. You know what you can do when you realize it's temporary? When your friend or your rival wins, you can applaud them also. And part of it, you can applaud them and say, that is great. You know, good for you. They're going to throw your trophy away too one day. You know, you, because it doesn't say anything about you being less. It just says they were good at that and they did well at that. That's a wonderful thing to applaud and be, but also realize, you know, with all of your friends, there'll be a day that they'll throw their trophy away too. And they'll need someone to say, listen, there's more than just that. There's something bigger than that. There's something that is lasting as far as your identity and who you are is concerned. And you want to build that into your kids so that they can face, just like James Dobson, they can face the letdowns that they will face in life. They can face the disappointments that they will face in life because who they are is much bigger than just what they have achieved or what they've done. Here's number six, because it's not achieved, but it is received. I'm getting to number seven, but I guess I need to finish this, right? Verse 13, it says, the hired hand runs away because he's working only for the money. He doesn't really care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own sheep. They know me. Just as my Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I sacrifice my life for the sheep. Here's the last one. The good shepherd alone. The good shepherd alone provides true safety or true security for our lives. He alone does that because he loves us. He knows us. He made us. The good shepherd is the one that's going to stick with us through everything, including at the end of life when all of a sudden you become irrelevant in life. And you will. That's okay. You won't be irrelevant to him. You won't have lost your place and your identity and, you know, in him. So that's why I say I think the most important thing you can do is to include in your kids, building into them faith-based habits. That's why I call them faith-based habits. Habits built on what you understand and what you know about who Jesus Christ is and what Jesus Christ did for you. We're going to pray together. And then Brian and a few of the band, they're going to come and sing a song. Just to let you know, I love this song. This is a song by Casting Crowns. And I mentioned about, you know, youth ministers and things like that. One of the reasons I like their songs is because they are youth ministers or were. And they would write songs based on what they were trying to teach the teenagers that they worked with. And they knew if they could put the words and the ideas, the theology, that's what it is, but those ideas about who they are and who God is, into music, and if they were good at it, if they could come up with, you know, songs that we liked, we would remember those words. And one of the things I like about their songs is their songs are just rich in meaning and understanding, and yet they're incredibly clever, even though this is one of those songs that's been around a long, you know, a little while, over 10 years, and it kind of reflects, you know, it took me that long to listen to it. No, I've known it for a long time, but I think you're going to really like this song that Brian comes and sings for you. So let's pray together. Heavenly Father, we thank you that you made us. And even as we live in a world that there are a lot of voices, and the truth is, God, we have a lot of desires to chase after those voices. And it's hard for us to separate on the inside where we got the direction that we are chasing and following sometimes. And so, God, we thank you that even now that you still lead us. You still direct us. You still give us a name. You call us by name. And you call us to yourself to know you and to follow you and to find our true understanding of ourselves, our true identity in you, in your Son Jesus Christ, who was willing to prove just how much he loved us. He was willing to lay down his life against what was a threat to us, against the fear, against the death, against the confusion that could easily lead us away from you. He was willing to face all of that so that we would know who we are in him. In Jesus' name we pray.